Thank you for tuning in once again to the GearyGirl.com official podcast. And I think that our guest today is someone who's been on the podcast. He has the distinct honor of being our most frequently returning guest, mainly because I want to hear what kind of wild stuff he's been up to. And he's been up to a lot of wild stuff. This is Logan Christopher, who's on the line today. And we just got back from the Dragon Door Health and Strength Conference, the second one ever in the entire universe that we are aware of. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that and some other fun things. So how are you doing today, Logan?
I'm doing great.
Cool, cool. So the reason you weren't at the first day of the conference is a good thing. So, you know, where were you? What was going on?
Well, I've had a very hectic travel schedule in the month of August here. I spent 2 weeks in the Amazon in Ecuador,
wow.
Traveling deep into the rainforest and spending time with indigenous peoples. Got home from that, had a day and a half at home. Then I was off to another event called Camp Maverick. And literally like up till 4 a.m, the day of the conference there, then flying out to Minnesota. That was the only way I could make the event. So I was slotted as the last speaker. So it was a very hectic travel schedule. There's a lot of lack of sleep going on. But I'm glad I did that all. And I'm also glad that it's now all over.
I understand that last sentiment, even though I didn't have that. That's an amazing travel schedule.
Yeah
that's, wow. I would need a lot of espresso to make that happen.
Well, so, there's some fun things in the Amazon. I'll just share this real quick. A plant they use there is called Wayusa, and it's a heavily caffeinated tea, actually like more caffeine than coffee.
Ooh.
And with the Achuar people, they do like every single morning, they'll be up at 3 or 4 o'clock. They did it a little bit later for us to join them, but they'll drink a whole bunch of this tea until their stomach is full and then actually purge.
Whoa.
They'll make themselves vomit it out to help clear the senses. They do that as a form of like clearing or purging, and they do this every single day. So that was fun to participate in.
Fun. Did you hear the air quotes around that, everyone?
No, it was part of the reason I wanted to go to the Amazon was to spend time to actually experience, because I've read about indigenous peoples, but to actually experience what they do in the different culture and partake in these things, such as doing that, which is, you know, very important to them and very important part of what they do.
Right.
So to actually be invited into that was pretty special.
That's very intense. Well, I can see how, you know, that kind of, you know, experiential ritual every morning would bind a community together very strongly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then they spend the next hour or so, you know, they don't pay attention to time too much, but just talking, interpreting dreams. They're a big dream culture, so they kind of direct their lives based on their dreams for that given day. So that's very fun to do.
That is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So they have very minimal contact with, you know, the rest of the world, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's interesting because basically these, and there's a bunch of different indigenous peoples which are similar in many respects but also have their differences, and some of them have more contact than others. The Achuar are probably one of the least contacted, but in order to help preserve their land, what they're going for, you know, not having oil companies come in and drill up and destroy the Amazon there, they have to sort of become westernized to a certain degree in order to fight this sort of westernization,
right,
is one way that I would describe it. So yeah, they have like a federation and leaders, and you know, those people may be traveling and going to the cities a bit more, but many of the people just, they're in their communities there and don't really have much outside contact except when people like me get to visit.
That is amazing. How did you make that contact? That's just so cool.
It's through this business organization that I'm with called Mavericks. And one of the things that we do within that organization is work with a number of different charities, helping them to increase their impact and reach and all that. So at a recent event, I got in touch with this organization called Pachamama Alliance, who leads a number of these trips down to the Amazon and other areas. And once I heard about it, just called me strongly, and I decided I had to go despite the other travel I had coming up. So I made that happen. And yeah, it's a very cool organization. So I look forward to doing more with them in the future as well.
That's really cool. How are they working to help the indigenous peoples?
So they actually directly support, give money to these different people just on a monthly basis so that they can do things like have the internet, can afford to fly in their leaders, go to different places, just so that these people can fight for their own rights. And there have been some phenomenal results in doing that, and it's still an ongoing battle. So that's one of the things that they do, as well as basically teaching us Westerners a little bit more about what's going on and how we can help support in different ways.
Wow, that is really cool. It is interesting how, you know, there is a cost related to being able to communicate with the modern world.
It's a very interesting thing. And you go there, and there's like aspects of Western culture, like they tend to have our normal clothing. They can dress up in their traditional dress, but they have our clothing. Like the shaman we went and visited, he's wearing an IBM shirt. So it's just funny things like that that are present when you do that.
Yeah, that's funny. Wow. So cool. Well, that sounds like just such an amazing life experience. So I'm glad that I'll be looking forward to reading your blog and seeing, you know, additional stories that come out from that.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing a whole bunch of articles. I've already posted a couple, and then I'll probably be doing just a full podcast episode going into more detail, because there are many, many stories to share.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that big time. So then from there, you went to, I forget the name of it, you just told
me. Camp Maverick.
Yes.
So this is that organization that put me in touch with this charity. Maverick, this event's described as summer camp for entrepreneurs. So bunch of different entrepreneurs and business owners of some high caliber people out there. And it's literally a summer camp. So we had fun activities like water skiing and trapeze and playing dodgeball with bows and arrows, not real arrows. They were padded, but it was dodgeball with that. It's a lot of fun. And then there's like business sessions and whatnot. So it's a pretty fascinating event, unlike anything else I've ever seen.
That sounds like a lot of fun. I've been known to say that kind of like my goal for daily life is a cross between college and summer camp. And most days I'm pretty good, unless there's some kind of like IT crisis or something like that I'm having to deal with. And yeah, I'm usually pretty close. So I would be up for Entrepreneur Summer Camp. I'm going to have to talk to you about that.
Well, yeah, I'll send you an invite for next year.
Oh, sweet. Okay, so even though you were just there for the tail end of the Health and Strength Conference, I want to kind of give people a little bit of background. So this was the second ever one that Dragon Door has done. The first one was great. I feel like the second one was even better. I was telling you a little bit before the call that mine and yours have a little bit of an overlap. I just really feel like mindset is so important. What I had talked about in my presentation on the Saturday before you arrived was basically a lot of our plateaus and, you know, just sort of goals that we can't quite get or can't quite achieve often are not necessarily pure strength issues, and mindset plays a lot into it. Another presentation that was a little bit before mine that you will enjoy, John Bruni. I was so glad I didn't have to follow him, because he had all these cool toys and like demos, and we're all like clamoring to get up there and do these things. It was like super interactive. But he was talking about a lot of multi-sensory inputs and issues and ways to use those to boost your strength and your ability. And I was talking similarly, kind of a little bit more on the negative side of it, say, hey, are any of these type of inputs holding you back? And of course, mindset plays into that hugely. I think I might have even mentioned your book. It's a distinct possibility. But eventually I want to write a decision tree that came from my presentation. And I'll just kind of give the brief notes for this, because I don't have time to really write out a nice blog post, unfortunately. But a lot of what I talked about were thinking about the problems. Are they micro or are they macro? Do you need a telescope or do you need a microscope? Are they physical, mental, or environmental? And environmental is a funny thing. Like if you find out, I don't know if this is, I wanted to ask you about this actually. So if I'm doing pull-ups and I'm facing down the hall, maybe I get an extra rep. If I flip around on the bar and I'm facing out toward my main room, maybe I can't do so many. You run into that.
Yeah, it's that's certainly a psychological aspect. I mean, there's no real... I mean, you're looking at a different thing, so that could certainly play into it. But, I mean, there's no real change in the bar. There's no real change in you, so why should these things be different?
Right.
It's just that we may be more comfortable or empowered in one, facing one direction than another. So, yeah, that's certainly something I have noticed myself. You know, if I'm practicing, I've been doing a lot of different types of one-legged squats in the morning, and I'll tend to face the same direction. But sometimes I think, okay, I need to switch this up and do it, and then there's a slightly different feel to the exercise.
Yeah, isn't that? It's just it's a strange. Oh, the wonders of the human mind. So, anyway, so in the presentation, I actually go through a lot of different ways to think about, you know, if you're stuck at a plateau, if you've come to a block in your training, and you know what, I will actually outline more of that. I think in a blog post, just because it's fun, and it is from the whole presentation was pulled from the notes of a chapter in my upcoming book. So,
nice.
Yeah, I think that's the first time I've mentioned that on the podcast. I've been keeping it to myself because, quite frankly, I'm scared to death.
Well, it's good you're doing something that scares you. We all need to do that a bit more.
Yeah. So saith the Lululemon bag quote, right? So, yeah, anyway, right. So getting back to that conference a little bit, your presentation was great. How many people were on stage with you during your...
So here's the thing. Like I mentioned, I was extremely sleep deprived, and my counting of numbers was very difficult at that time. I think we had 8 people on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just to explain, I was for people that weren't there or haven't heard about it yet, I was teaching how to use hypnosis for strength and fitness, different aspects of it. Specifically here, this is kind of way I like to do some mental training drills to give people an experience of it. But if you have a unilateral exercise, so in this case, we were doing the kettlebell press, we have someone start off just normal, so they're acting as their own control, just press with their stronger arm and see how many reps they can do with a given weight. Then we do some sort of mental training. In this case, it was I led everyone through, not just the people on stage, but many people in the audience participated as well, through a hypnotic induction and programming that probably was about maybe 8 minutes long or something like that, just that involved some visualization, some various things that I did in the hypnosis there. And then after this, for all the people on stage, one at a time, they would then press the same kettlebell with their weaker arm. And even though it's the weaker arm, right, because people tend to have a stronger and weaker arm, I think all of them, or maybe it was all but one of them, were able to press more with the weaker arm, and many of them hit big PRs for themselves in doing that. So that's a little fun experiment I like to do, and I'm glad it went well on stage there.
Yeah, I mean, we couldn't even tell that you were sleep deprived, so good job.
Yeah, well, I hypnotized myself before I spoke, and I had practiced enough, so I knew, even though I was not 100%, that I'd be able to deliver it in a good way. But I could certainly notice a couple things myself that were not quite 100% there.
Wow, that's the truth. The second I got off stage after my presentation, I remembered like 12 things that I wanted to say that I totally didn't say, but...
Yep, I think that happens no matter how on you are.
I think it's human nature. I mean, we had that Dunn Brothers coffee that was fantastic right next door. I was, fully firing on all cylinders, and it still was like, oh. Now, I loved your presentation, and, afterwards, since you were the last, I had started a Facebook live stream, which I should probably take a piece of it and add it to this or whatnot, and kind of summing up the experience of the workshop presentations. And while I was talking, I could see in the phone behind me that Steve Holliner, our good buddy, Coach Fury, was, kind of psyching himself up and, cleaned a barbell, or not a barbell. Ooh, hey. Speaking of, I need to sleep more. cleans the kettlebell and starts pressing it. And I realize that something special is happening. I don't know what. So I go ahead and I get him in the frame. And I'm like, all right, we're just going to watch. We're going to see what this is about. And then we'll ask him what's going on afterwards. And hopefully he won't mind that I totally just streamed him out live to all of the internet. And it turns out he was in the process of setting a PR using your method from on stage. Mm-hmm. And I think you saw that video as well.
Yes, I did. So just for people that are listening, so we had the people on stage, but I wanted to give an experience to everyone. So through the hypnotic programming, those people following along, it was directed so that even though they had to wait a little bit of time, they'd be able to go and use the power of that hypnosis for themselves there, just like he did.
Mm-hmm. Now, it seemed to work for him too, which was super cool.
Even though he mentioned he hadn't been pressing at all and he did this without any sort of warm-up, he beat his previous best by one rep, so he did 9 reps with the 36 kilogram kettlebell, which is not a bad number at all.
Right, and you've been basically sitting down. I mean, we've been doing little exercise snacks and stuff, but nothing I would think of as being a proper warm-up. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty awesome. I really enjoyed that. And one of the things I really liked about your presentation was how you talked about, hypnosis is not, and we hear that word and we all picture funky psychedelic swirly backgrounds and
right.
creepy dudes in top hats swinging watches. And, yep. You really broke down really what it is and took a lot of the goofy hoodoo wacky stuff out of it and say, hey, this is a tool you can use. Mm-hmm. I thought that was important.
Yeah, I feel that's necessary because people, they've heard of hypnosis, they have some sort of ideas about it, and that's probably, unless they've actually really engaged in it, going to be a bunch of misconceptions. So really, the first part of my presentation was all about breaking that down and sort of setting the frame so that people could see this not as some mystical or woo-woo tool or, just something goofy, but mm-hmm. really something that was actually usable, and so I could set them up for that experience to come in a little bit of time.
Yeah, no, I thought it was great. So
thank you.
And even
I spent a lot of work on it. So
yeah, well, it comes through, and it is such an important message. And I didn't get a chance to tell you this, but and I feel bad, but I about this, I kind of cornered you before the Beast Tamer Iron Maiden challenge. I'm like, help me out, Logan. You got 30 seconds, go! And you're like, ah! And you actually ended up giving me great advice, although I knew I wasn't going to make the pull up. It wasn't
any... You were not ready that day.
No, not at all. And then, I saw my friend Rob, almost make it 2 or 3 times, and I think I got psyched out at that point, because I'm like, well, shoot, if Captain Trapezoidus Rex over there isn't getting it today, who the heck am I? Because
there's a good thing to think before you do it.
Yeah, I know, right? Way to go.
I was thinking about this because you were mentioning that, and yes, we could do something right in the moment, but really, I see the ideal way to use mental training would be just throughout your training, so that when you're coming to a competition or a test like that, really, you want to be so well set up both mentally and physically that it's no problem for you to do. I think that would be the ideal way to do it. And then, we could do some things to help supercharge at the end there, mm-hmm. but really, it's optimally, it would be kind of a foregone conclusion at that point.
Well, the funny thing is, something did happen. And you and I were having our chat, and that press I did with the 24, that press went up so easily that when I got it up there, I had a moment of panic. Oh, crap. Did I grab the wrong kettlebell? Oh my gosh, I bet that's a 20 kilo up there. I checked it and I checked it again, but there's a lot of people milling around. There's a lot going on. I bet I totally just pressed that 20 because I could pop that sucker up there any day of the week. Yeah. No big deal. No, it was the 24, but it had a rocket jet pack attached to it that no one else could see. It's...
Yeah, stuff works.
It was seriously. And, you know, even though I do train heavier than the 24, like my max press is a 28 kilo, and it's not the prettiest press you've ever seen in your life, but it is illegal. And, you know, but the 24 usually still feels heavy to me. I mean, for someone of my weight, all these things are heavy. And, but man, that 24 just shot straight up. And, it was definitely due to what we were talking about. And also the fact that I knew, I'm like, I got this. And I'm looking forward to having that attitude toward the pull-up. So I'll be using, using the mental training throughout the preparation, like you were saying, I think is what's really going to get the job done. So that is part of my new plan.
Yeah, I'm working towards that too. I think I'm making that one of my goals. I'm gonna work at is doing the Beast Tamer challenge.
Very cool. Now, don't add a new challenge to it, because I just imagined you also lifting it with your hair, since you have a history of doing such things.
It has been a little while since I've done anything with the hair, though. So not looking to bring that back in quite yet.
Yeah, I've seen that picture, and it's where you're pulling the antique fire truck, and I must say it does not get less terrifying looking with repeated viewings.
Yeah, it's good. I was thinking about that. If I never do anything else with my hair, I'll always have that, and it will always amaze people. So I'm glad I did it at the time, but yeah, I wouldn't necessarily want to do it again.
I was going to say, you know, check the box, move on, bigger, better, whatever, right?
I mean, there's plenty of other craziness to focus on.
Oh, yeah, there's an endless source of craziness. Let's be honest with ourselves. Now, even before you arrived, your company had a fun table at the back, and I went back there to check in with them to see what they had going on, and they ended up giving me so many fun little things that I got home and realized that I'm like, you know what, I need to talk to Logan about how to use these. And while I did have fun poking around on your website and totally found the answer there, I figured it would be more fun to make you talk about it on the podcast.
Absolutely.
So since we're talking about training and all, the first two things I've got here are your Hercules pre-workout formula and then the Titan post-workout formula. And I noticed that both of these do not have the usual things we expect from a pre-workout generally, or pre or post-workout, you know, which are generally like, oh, you know, 10 tons of caffeine and maybe like what, beta-alanine? Is that,
creatine. Yeah. Yeah. Other things along those lines.
Things that end in teen. right. BCAAs. You know, not that there's anything wrong with any of that stuff, but you know, yours have some much more exotic and
stuff that people have never heard of before.
And they both have very unique smells.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Lost Empire Herbs, we just went through a rebranding, and so that's the new name. We're an herbal supplement company. We focus on herbs, and we've made the decision, like, other people can handle different powders and isolated nutrients and whatnot. We deal purely in herbal ingredients. Now we're kind of using the broad definition of herbs, so it's not all plant stuff. We have insect in the Hercules formula, the ant extract, which is an amazing pre-workout by itself, so we definitely wanted to include that in there. But yeah, our stuff is purely herbal, and so yes, it smells like herbs, it tastes like herbs. We don't add any sort of filler, anything to make it taste better. So it's just pure herbal goodness. And some people may find that off-putting, and well, you kind of got to man up or woman up and just go with it. And truly, your taste will develop. I don't think you'll ever necessarily get to a place where you think these things taste good. And there are some ways you can circumvent them, but you can get to a point where you don't mind it so much.
Right. Well, you know, results probably help with that too.
Yeah. And I've always been, you know, I'll do just about anything, you know, if the result will come. So Yeah, I guess the herbs. And here's the thing, like, these ones taste pretty bad, though we do have much worse tasting ones. So after you've had the worst tasting ones, these ones aren't that bad anymore.
Okay, so you guys really hooked me up with a bunch of stuff. What is the worst tasting one you have?
So our worst tasting one is the Thor's Hammer formula, which...
Okay, I don't have that.
Possibly, I mean, this is kind of ironic, but that's our sexual potency formula. Yeah, so it, with the herbs, like, in some ways they're interchangeable. So yeah, we have the pre-workout and the post-workout, but some people have used the post-workout as a pre-workout, or you could use the pre-workout post-workout, mm-hmm. or some people use these for sex or have used the sex formula for working out. So here's the thing with, I realize this with Chinese medicine, you mm-hmm. have sort of the yang driving herbs, the more aggressive, like working out, that sort of thing.
Right.
Herbs that fuel that sort of energy, mm-hmm. it's the same energy you need for sex. Huh. So one herb that helps with one thing is going to basically help with the other.
That's interesting. Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I've noticed then in a lot of my own research that what your foods that are good for mental performance and physical performance and then sexual performance, there's so much overlap yeah. with those three areas of concern.
Yeah, and, absolutely. And I would say that the same sort of thing, that kind of like clear, sharp mind, that would be considered sort of a yang mm-hmm. attribute as well. So that can go along in there. And like rhodiola, which is one of the herbs you got, mm-hmm. and that's in the Hercules formula as well. I mean, that's a great one for endurance and just work capacity, but mm-hmm. also a great nootropic, great for the mind, the mental clarity that comes with that. So yeah, there is certainly a blend between those. Kind of the sort of Western mindset, you know, our pharmaceutical mindset, they try mm-hmm. to look at one drug for one thing, and it shouldn't do anything else. It's only like this, but really herbs, nature does not work in that way. So mm-hmm. I like to say our herbs have lots of side effects, beneficial side effects that come with it. So you may be taking the pre-workout formula in order to enhance your workouts, but then you notice, you know, your sex is better, or your mind is more clear, you have more energy throughout the day, all these other effects that may come as a result of that.
All right. Well, hey, you know what? It sounds like it's all good. So that's a yep. that's a wonderful thing. So yeah, rhodiola is interesting. I'm very fascinated by adaptogens in general. Mm-hmm. I've taken Eleuthero for years. And I think we talked about that last time.
Yep.
You know, I've been curious about rhodiola rosea. And it's got an interesting, I'll say this about everything, it's got an interesting smell to it. But this one is an interesting smell, you know, interesting as an interesting, not as the, when my mother will say, that's interesting, which is how the Hercules smells. you know, so how would you recommend ingesting rhodiola rosea in terms of you know, day, times of day, what to put with it, what not to put with it?
Mm-hmm. So with rhodiola, it's going to depend on the extract. Like, we have mm-hmm. very high quality extract where you don't need a whole lot of it. Mm-hmm. Depending on sourcing and all these other things, what I'm saying here, it applies to our rhodiola. I can't necessarily say it applies to someone else's.
Right.
But you'll notice the taste is, it's extremely what's called astringent. Like, it will dry out your mouth completely. So it can be a fun one to take for that reason. If you've never experienced that before, rhodiola is a great example of that mouthfeel. it's not classified as a stimulant, but it can certainly be stimulating. Like you said, it's adaptogen is generally how it's thought of. So it's going to help your body to better handle stress, whether physical or mental. And it does that kind of through stimulating the stress response in a certain way so that your body's better able to handle it. It's kind of a eustressor in that way. But it can be very stimulating and also heating. Like me personally, I can't do a whole lot of rhodiola. I'm already kind of a hot person, so it can be a bit too much for me. So our recommended dosage there, it comes with a little tiny spoon that's 100 milligrams, and to take 3 to 5 of those a day. Okay. This would be a great one to take first thing in the morning, or take it along with coffee or whatever. Mm-hmm. The flavor might go with that in some ways, or if you're doing it, like I said before, good as a pre-workout or mm-hmm. after your workout. But for most people, I'd say you probably don't want it too late in the evening. Mm-hmm. But some people may be fine with doing that. You just got to find what works for them. I can notice the effects just taking 100 milligrams of that. Mm-hmm. I also mentioned that it's great for that mental clarity. So lately, I've been experimenting. We're putting together a mental formula once again. So this is one of the ingredients I'm working with that. Because, yeah, you can kind of feel that clarity of mind coming from it as well.
That's very cool. Very cool. But, yeah, it's funny. I was thinking the other day, I've been curious about nootropics actually since the 90s. And yeah. I've been so amused lately with, there's a book I need to show you that I have. It's from like 1992. It's a compilation of this crazy magazine that used to come out of San Francisco called Mondo 2000. And they, you know, this is what, you know, people in, you know, on the cutting edge of, quote, Silicon Valley, if it was even called that back then. Yeah, I think it was. I'm trying to remember. I was a child. I actually ended up, you know, kind of getting this for a school paper that I was writing. If I really wish I could find, because I was an early adopter of internet-esque things. I was on a lot of chat rooms and BBSs and, you know, this thing called Deskmate, which was later gobbled up by AOL. And my friends were on Quantum Link from Commodore 64. So yeah, guys, I've been a nerd for a long time. right. But this book was talking a lot about nootropics, and they called it, you know, smart drugs back then, because that's such a buzzword. And, you know, in college, a lot of us were curious about some of these nutrients, and, you know, various coffee houses would make you these funky, odd tasting smoothies full of vitamins. And, you know, it was like a fun thing to go do. Our friends were, you know, drinking, but we're over here, you know, having these odd tasting smoothies before studying. And that was a lot of fun. And I'm noticing a lot of these same words coming up, but, you know, a lot of it now is pharmaceutical. And I don't know if it's just my own personal bias, but I just find that to be boring and not interesting. And, you know, I was never one of those Adderall kids. So the idea of herbs, I'm very open to. Mm-hmm. And nootropic herbs and all.
Yeah, the whole nootropic field, it's mostly either drugs or isolated nutrients. There's a couple herbs in there, mm-hmm. But even with most of those, it's like finding isolated extracts. And that's all well and good for the people that want to do that. But right. Like you said, I'm all about the herbs. I like to think that there's wisdom in the whole herb, not necessarily even doing a standardized extract, mm-hmm. but having everything in there. Because, I mean, let's face it, if we look at one component that we think is doing the thing, okay, we have some science about that. But generally with a lot of these herbs, there's not even that much science behind it, because there's not a lot of pharmaceutical type level of funding in order to find something. And mm-hmm. then that's one component, when some of these herbs have hundreds, if not thousands, of components. So, yeah, there can be a lot going on, and our science only begins to scratch the surface. So I do like to look at the science, and I love to see what's coming out there. And mm-hmm. I also look at the ancient wisdom and mm-hmm. ancient uses, how these different things were used.
Well, yeah, I think it's important to keep that balance mentally, you know, when we assess a lot of these. Because, you know, I'm constantly looking for, all right, how can I tweak just the foods that I eat to, you know, fuel my performance, mental and physical, or, you know, make sure that in times of stress or crazy deadlines that I can keep going with minimal damage, you know, and that's just food. And there's, you know, like herbs, food has all of those multiple components. If we think about an egg, you know, I like to eat the whole egg, but you've got also a lot of folks that are over there separating eggs out, eating only the yolks or eating mm-hmm. only the whites. And I'm like, you know, I've got limited counter space. I'm just going to eat the egg.
I'm right with you there.
Yeah. Like, oh, wait, if I do that, I've got one other thing I got to wash in the sink. No, not happening. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, and when you're buying pasture-raised eggs, right, the price begins to go up. So you're like, I'm using the whole egg. I'm not wasting any of this when you're paying over $1 per egg.
Oh, totally. That's so the truth. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I thought, oh, I'm going to go to my friend's cool new little farmer's market they're having over there. I like to be supportive. And I knew they were going to have some things that I wanted to buy. And I had this short list. I go over there. And next thing I know, I'm walking back to my car with a $70 bag of goodies. But, you know, I've got those pastured eggs in there. I've got a pasture-raised, fully non-GMO chicken that I'll be roasting. Yes. And I showed all these items off on a Facebook Live video, and, you know, everyone's like, oh, so when's dinner? When can I come over? I'm like, it's frozen hard. Leave me alone. But one of the items I've been very excited about has been the bone broth. Have you been doing much with bone broth?
Oh, yeah. I've been making that for a long time. I've also been playing with, I guess, company came out with some bone broth protein. I don't know if you've seen this.
No, I have not.
Yeah, it's a protein powder that is bone broth, and I've used a number of protein powders over the years and really don't like any of them that much.
Yeah.
But this bone broth, it's great. Like, if you don't have bone broth, cause let's face it, it's a little bit labor intensive.
Yes.
And you know, sometimes I run out or don't have a stock of it. Mm-hmm. So this protein powder, you just mix it in hot water and voila, you have bone broth again. And you can also throw it in shakes and smoothies. So yeah, I've certainly been enjoying this lately.
That sounds really good. I'm gonna definitely need to check that out. I did find a protein powder recently that I have liked. But this has been a very recent find, as in like last month. And it's called like Paleo Pro, and it's beef and egg based. Mm. Which sounds disgusting because I've tried a number of beef and egg and beef blood based protein powders in the past several years. And it's just been like, oh, but this actually, I don't know what they did to it, but it's very good. I've tried both the vanilla and the chocolate, and it's not overbearing. Yeah, I don't like to rely on protein powders, but they are helpful. They are useful to have in the toolkit. I know a lot of people disagree with me on that, but that's okay. We all have different lifestyles. But yeah, this Paleo Pro is actually pretty good.
Nice. I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah, I want to check out that bone broth thing because I bought two large containers of bone broth. I have a small apartment. If I try to make bone broth here, I and everything I own will smell like bone broth until eternity.
Is that necessarily a bad thing, though?
I don't know. I mean, I like dogs, but I don't need them following me everywhere, trying to, like, lick everything. Yeah, that could get awkward and weird. But, so when you make bone broth, are you doing in stovetop, slow cooker, pressure cooker? What's going on?
I used to do it stovetop a lot. Now I've been, just because it's a little bit easier, the slow cooker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then I throw the bones in there. Usually I'll use beef bones. I've used those more than anything else just because, you know, you got all the marrow and a bunch of stuff. But I'll use the chicken carcass or whatever else at my store, local store. They just started recently selling chicken feet, so I made some chicken feet broth recently as well. Little bit of a different taste, and, you know, kind of fun to look at the chicken feet, but yeah, good stuff.
Fun to look at the chicken feet. See, this is why we're friends, Logan. We say stuff like that. Oh man. Yeah. I think the chicken that I bought, it's kind of folded up, but there's more leg on it than I am accustomed to seeing like in a supermarket. So I don't know if it's got feet. Folded in there. If so, I'll send you an email and be like, okay, so, you know, I've seen the dim sum thing. I don't know how to make the dim sum chicken feet. Now might be the time to learn, or your broth situation sounds a little bit easier.
Well, if it has them in there, just after you eat the bird, you know, throw the carcass in there with the feet. Otherwise, to make chicken feet broth, you'd need a lot of feet.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know what else I really like? And I was so happy to see that Whole Foods has them. I'm just wondering who now is listening is like completely grossed out. But they had little containers of chicken hearts, which I love those. Get little skewers of them sometimes, and it's like a cross between a mushroom and it's like a mushroom with a little bit of a meatiness to it. At least that's something. So I'm like, do you ever cook chicken hearts? I'm a huge fan of organ meats.
Yeah, I haven't done a lot of hearts lately. I'll have to look at my Whole Foods, see if I can find those. We do a fair amount of liver. Well, we feed our cats a lot of liver, and occasionally I also cook it for myself.
Oh, the truth comes out.
My cats love liver just raw. They go crazy for that more so than anything else. But they really like every organ meat, just tend to find the liver a little easier.
Yeah. That's funny. Dogs love liver too. A veterinarian that I used to work with on occasion with some of my own pets, she said, I think it was one of her like doctoral projects, you know, figuring out what taste that dogs like the best. I'm like, oh, what a fun project. And it was a liver. They just absolutely bonkers for liver. So yeah. I don't know. Human beings do not go bonkers for liver.
Well, it's interesting, and this, I guess, may kind of wrap some of the other topics we've been talking about. And I'll actually even bring it back to the start of the call. as our human diet, like, we have gotten so far, like, I'm not even talking about, you know, do we eat this way or that way, or standard American diet, but we've completely lost food groups that were always a part of every indigenous people, herbs of different sorts. Like, we kind of, some people use culinary herbs, right? Herbs for cooking, but really all these herbal supplement stuff, like, it is food. It's not necessarily a supplement. Yeah, we kind of take it in a supplemental form, but the herbs ought to be a part of your diet because they're bringing in different things, and especially bitter herbs, right? A lot of these tastes are pretty bad because we've divorced ourselves from the bitter taste. But in doing that, bitter means that it has certain components, all these different components, so we've gotten rid of all those things, and thus our health suffers for it. The different organ meats, you know, we're not meant to just eat the muscle of different animals. Much more of the nutrition is found in things, the various organs and the bones, and the feet as well, I guess. And then fermented foods as well.
Oh, yeah.
That whole bacteria component is just so huge, and that really ought to be a everyday part of your diet. The Achuar people in the Amazon I was staying with, told you I was going to bring it back to the start of the call.
Yes.
Their main food is chicha, which is spit beer. The women chew up the manioc root and then spit it out, and they let ferment, and they all drink this, gallons of it a day. So their main form of food is spit beer, and they just drink a lot of it, and it's fermented. So it's an interesting food. We got to try it while down there. You know, you try not to think about it too much, but it really wasn't too bad. It was like it's a fermented food, so it has that sour taste to it, and it being like new bacteria that certainly getting used to, the body's not quite ready for me to drink gallons of it, but over time I can imagine myself really enjoying that, and it's, you know, it's going to have that probiotic quality to it, but it's also a major part of their nutrition. Their fuel for a given day is just drinking this chicha.
Wow that's amazing. And what's interesting about that, if you think about you know, shared bacteria within a community and like their biome, that's a way of kind of reinforcing that. That's interesting.
Yeah, and it's interesting because they'll talk about, so only the women make chicha. It's kind of like a sacred thing, and men aren't even allowed to touch it except by drinking it.
Yeah, you keep your boy cooties away.
Yeah, but the different women will be known like, oh, she makes the best chicha, and there'll be different flavors slightly different based on who makes it. So it's interesting because you notice, because it's all going to be fermented based on that initial mouth bacteria that's involved. So it's a pretty interesting thing to think about.
That's fascinating. It's a little bit gross to my Western mind, but it is fascinating.
Yeah. But it's the same thing, right? Bitter herbs are gross. Organ meats are gross.
Right.
Fermented foods, all this bacteria, and spit. I mean, of course, I'm of the West too, so I agree. But imagine if you grew up on this, yeah, it'd be no problem. Of course you drink gallons of that a day.
You're like, yeah, my mom makes the best chicha. What's your problem? Yeah.
So these people, they drink like heavily caffeinated tea and throw it up. Then they're drinking alcohol all day long. It's just, they don't drink water at all.
Well, that was my next question, because I know to generate that amount of saliva, you know, how are these? Wow.
Yeah, they don't drink water. As it is, I mean, they obviously are boiling water for the tea, and I'm not sure if some of it's mixed in order to make this chicha or how exactly they do it. I didn't get clear answers on all that, but just think about it. We can say, oh, you got to drink pure water. It's a foundation of health.
Yeah. Nope,
these people are drinking caffeinated tea and alcohol all day long.
Wow. Yeah, two big diuretics right there. Although, you know, I drink so much coffee and espresso. I feel like, you know, at some point the body's like, all right, well, so this is how it is, okay? And adjusts a little bit.
Right. The body is very adaptable.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I do drink a ton of water too, but...
I'm not giving up water either.
I'm so glad to hear that. I'm sure everyone in your life is also glad to hear that. It's a good thing.
I do want to get my wife making chicha. That would be awesome.
How does she feel about that?
I don't think I've introduced that idea to her yet, but I'll do that later today.
you might need to frame that in a particular light. I don't know. Wow, that's... Oh, man. Okay. Well, you know what? I think that's a great note. We came up, came full circle, probably grossed a few people out, which I, you know, the little 8-year-old inside of me is always gleefully happy to do. And maybe answered some fun questions. Oh, wait, before we go, though, I did want to talk to you about bitter taste. That is interesting that has left. You know, we all think it's salty, sweet, tart, shoot, what are the other tastes?
Pungent or spicy.
Pungent, that's right. And I also like to recognize the umami, the kind of delicious meatiness to things. And bitter, sometimes there's things that don't taste right without that little twinge of bitterness. You know, that's something I actually enjoy about coffee, and then other people really hate about coffee. It's like I have a friend who claims to be a super taster and so therefore she hates everything that's bitter. And I'm not sure that's the only definition of super taster. I taste a very, very intense spectrum of flavors. And I don't mind bitter flavors.
Right.
Give me a good solid...
That's the thing. People just take this whole category and label it as bad. And if you do that, you know, each person could do this individually in their mind, and then it's going to shut them down. So much of our taste is a mental component to it as well. You know, when I was a kid, I really didn't eat any fruits or vegetables besides like strawberries and watermelon. I think literally that's the only fruit or vegetables I would eat for a long period of time.
Wow.
Then I grew up and I realized, okay, there's these tastes and, you know, you might not like it at first, but if you just get used to it a little bit and there's some ways you can help yourself do that, then, yeah, you can begin to open yourself. And instead of thinking, oh, this is bad or this is good, just think this is interesting and different. And you can begin to open yourself up to these different things, which can then, as I mentioned before, bring about different results.
Yeah, you know, I'm really super lucky because I think it was a little bit before second grade, I got to go over to England with my folks for a couple weeks. And leading up to this, I don't remember too much about leading up to it other than, okay, well, foods are going to be different over there and you don't want to be like your friend's whiny little brother who will only eat like French fries and hush puppies. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want to be like that. And so they kind of gave me this mindset of it's good to try weird and unusual things. And of course, I took that, ran with it, and kind of turned it into a lifelong extreme sport. Ooh, that's weird. Let's eat it. You know, I'm not sure that was their intention, as with many things. Including it's okay to be different. I took that and ran with it. But, you know, I love to try new foods. If I find it, oh my gosh, that's a fruit I've never heard of. I must have it.
Oh, yeah. So that was completely my experience in the Amazon. Anything new I could try, I was game for it.
Yeah. So, like, did you get to try any new weird fruits or vegetables?
Yeah, there's a what's called, like, tomato tree fruit. So it's not a tomato. And it grows around all over down there. And they use it a lot. I'd never even heard of it before that. So that was a pretty interesting one. Probably one of my favorites. We got to have, like, a full-on indigenous meal. They cooked it in a palm leaf. And we had, like, catfish that was caught in the lake, as well as some different root vegetables. So that was great. And it was literally, like, served on the palm leaf that was halfway burnt and just eating it with our fingers. So that was very enjoyable.
No dishes. Way to go, guys. That's awesome. Now, did it have, like, a completely different flavor profile than what we're used to?
No, not completely different. It definitely not as, like, heavily seasoned or flavorful as we tend to make our foods. A little more, you know, bland, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just we're used to things tasting intense, right?
Right.
Everything is overly engineered in order to be that way. So, you know, it can be a good practice to go back to bland foods just as sort of a reset on that level.
Oh, yeah. I have done some weird form of that, actually, I think by accident. And it's been able to, even now, even though I'll eat all kinds of wildly flavored things and intense cheeses, but there's, like, this whole, you know, as flavor changes over time, you know, as you become more in tune with flavors, you know, there's even multiple flavor components to simple things like, you know, tomatoes or, you know, your tomato tree reminded me of that. And then, you know, subtleties that it's easy to not be aware of if, you know, we're shoveling overly spiced Doritos and Cajun pork rinds into our mouths, or even just you know, intensely spiced foods that that are very good. But yeah, I don't know. It's fascinating and good stuff. And I'm hungry now.
I'm very hungry too.
Well, I think we should call it at that. Thanks so much again for being on the podcast for a record-setting third time. Hooray.
Well, thanks for having me back. It was fun.
It's great to talk to you.
I always love chatting about chicken feet and insects and all the weird stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I'm going to have to warn Mom about this one. Be like, yeah, be brave.